Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 106. I'm recording it on Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 12. That's a little bit below fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for this podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com site. This particular the music selection used for this particular podcast is entitled Bumbly March. And the title of the podcast is Rob an egomaniac or not? Something that I believe in, some little bit of knowledge I've picked up over the course of walking this valley of tears for 52 years, is that there are certain things that come up that are puzzles. You look at something and you say, doesn't sound right. I can't, you know, why? I can't figure this out. It seems like a contradiction. And, you know, the ultimate example of that for our purposes is this whole question of, doesn't sound right when people say you can't time the market. That's a puzzle. That it would seem as though if you bought stocks at times of low prices, you would do a whole lot better than buying them at times of high prices. It would sure seem like timing should work, but lots of smart people say no, doesn't work. That's a puzzle. And what we often do when we come across puzzles is we maybe feel a little bit of puzzlement, but we go on with our lives because we don't have time to solve those puzzles. We've got a lot of things going on in our lives. And, you know, that's just the way it is. But what I have found is that sometimes I will have a puzzle and I don't solve it at the time, but 5 years later, I'll be doing something else and I'll read something, or I'll have some personal experience, or somebody will tell me a story, and I'll say, aha, that's that puzzle. That's the answer. That resolves it. Now I know. And when I learn the answer to the puzzle, it turns a key, and I learn and learn and learn. It's all the great learning experiences of my life. I don't want to speak too definitively, but I believe this is so. All of the truly great learning experiences of my life have been the result of solving a puzzle. You know, how I became one of the greatest savers in the world. You know, if you read my book, Passion Saving, my wife and I, we saved $88,000 in 1 year, one time. And in the years before that, before I learned about the passion saving concept, I was earning $60,000 and saving zero. The woman, at my employer, she was trying to talk me into putting money in the 401k that had a match. It had an employer match, and I wouldn't save money. I just said, no, thank you. So I solved that puzzle. I solved the puzzle of, you know, why the true value of saving. That's sort of the thing that clicked. In other words, for a long time, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I solved that puzzle, and I became the greatest, you know, one of the greatest savers in the world. So solving a puzzle is a high octane human life activity. It's the thing that's all, everything at my website is about solving puzzles, just about everything. Everything I write, all the podcasts I record, I'm always focused on that, trying to help people solve puzzles, because that's where the leverage is. The trouble you run into on the internet is what a lot of people want is tips. They want, you know, I only have 10 seconds to look at your website. Make it good, buddy. Use your 10 seconds well. And, you know, they have these, if you haven't done a website, you don't know about all this, but I don't pay too much attention to it myself, but they have things where you can measure how long people stay on your websites. They have all these tools, you know, you can get. And you know, I don't, I can't give you the right numbers, but I mean, it's like 20% of the people that come to your website are there for like less than 3 seconds or something. I mean, what the heck did they come with it? They wanted to see what color it was? You know, what the heck are they there for? What the heck could you learn about how to achieve financial freedom early in life in 2.3 seconds? I don't know. God bless them. I'm glad they came. You know, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you, friend. But sorry you couldn't stay longer than 2.3 seconds. Maybe we would have become good friends if you had stayed 2.6 seconds. You know, maybe that would have made a difference. But they're welcome. They're welcome to come, but I wish they would stay a little longer. I think to really learn how to retire 5, 10 years earlier, you probably need to spend, you know, a full minute. I mean, you know, it just that's just the way it is. You know, you've got to be a long-term thinker. Anyways, but the point is, tips don't get you there. Tips don't get you there. Investing tips or saving tips, or I believe. I mean, there's a place. You know, my favorite personal finance writer of all time is Amy Decision, and she had lots of saving tips, thousands of them, and she was wonderful. So there's a. I don't mean to be critical. There's a place for it, but it's not me. That's not what I'm about. What I'm usually trying to do is to solve puzzles, because my feeling is if you solve the puzzle, you know, once I solved the puzzle of why should I save, well, I became a madman and I searched for every book of tips I could find. And you know, what I needed was the book that told me how to solve the puzzle. So that's the book I wrote. That's Passion Saving. And in the investing field, it's the same idea. So I like to solve puzzles. And as I was listening to the last podcast, what was that, 105? I recorded that one yesterday, and it was about get rich slow versus get rich quick. And there was a little section in there where I was listening back to it just this morning, just a half an hour ago. And there was a section in there where I talked about my marriage, and I said, my wife and I are, I have this phrase that I like, the practical one married the dreamer. And I say that to achieve success in all forms of life endeavor, you need to combine a practical, down-to-earth, logical, rational element with a dreamy, emotional, intuitive, soft, you know, dream element. It's the combination of the two that is human life. And if you want to be a good investor, you can't be all about get rich slow. That doesn't work. It leads to passive investing. It leads to a dead approach that has tons of rationalizations connected with it, but ends up being pure nonsense. But on the other hand, I'm not a fan of get rich quick schemes either. You know, if it's all get rich quick, it's all, you know, it sounds good, you buy into it, you lose all your money, you start over again. Yeah, that doesn't work. You've got to mix the two. And so I was talking about, you know, when I mentioned my wife and how she's, you know, in our marriage, I tend to be the dreamer and she tends to be the practical, and I the marriage, I mentioned that the marriage works very well when we combine those things. We're dynamite, and there are times when we're just too wrapped up in ourselves and we can't communicate. We literally communication breaks down. You know, I've had this, oh, this happens, well, I don't want to say it happens all the time, but it happens frequently. And we'll be talking about some subject and I'll just say the same thing 10 times and she doesn't get it at all. Or and then she'll say it 10 times and I don't get it at all. We're just too wrapped up in ourselves. So this reaching out business is a good idea, but it's not always easy. That's hard sometimes. You know, understanding that other point of view is hard sometimes. That's the secret of life, you know, if you want to put it that way. I think you could say that. It's the secret of life. So there's a puzzle that came up in connection with my marriage at an earlier point in our discussions. And it was when it was several years back. I wrote an article for the, I believe this article is in the Heroes and Villains section of the site. Heroes and Villains is a section of the site where I talk about quote unquote experts. There's an article there on Susie Orman. There's an article there on John Bogle. There's an article there on Robert Kiyosaki and some others. Taylor Larimore, I forget who else. Number of people. And I'd like to do a lot more of them. If I, you know, if you can figure out a way to get 48 hours of a day, you know, I could triple it overnight, the stuff that's in there, but I just don't have time. And right now I'm on a podcast kick. I'm going to record, you know, podcast until I can't talk anymore. My voice gives out, and then I'll try something else. But I wrote an article on Rob Bennett. I said, you know, I was out taking a walk one day, I remember, and I said, you know, people were, the Bogle lovers were slamming me. Rob, you're so mean. You pointed out that John Bogle made a mistake. Rob, you are, oh, you're so mean. Rob, how'd you ever get so mean? Whatever happened to you? And I'm out there taking a walk, and I'm thinking, you know, well, they're clearly nuts. But, you know, God bless them. We're all nuts. They're clearly nuts, though. You know, I have to say what it is. And then I said, you know, I'm having this conversation with myself. I said, but is there something to what they're saying? You know, it's not one person saying this. It's a whole group of them. There must be something to it. That's the way I think. If you know, if one person says it, I just figure they really are nuts. But if it's, you know, 100, I say it can't be totally nuts. There's got to be something there. That was an earlier puzzle. You know, I came to that one by solving an earlier puzzle. You know, who knows when. So I'm out there on my walk, and I said, it's, you know, if the guy made a mistake, the right thing to do is to point it out. If he's telling people what to do with their money, if he made a mistake, he's going to hurt them. I've got to point it out. I'm a journalist. That's what journalists do. I've got to do it. If I don't care how much they hate me. There was a guy who wrote a review of my book, and then the goons attacked him, and he wrote me an email once, and he said, "You sure have a lot of enemies." And boy, that one sort of hit me. You know, a lot of the goon stuff sort of just bounces off at this point. But that one hit me. You know, "You sure have a lot of enemies," because I have no comeback to that. I do have a lot of enemies. I do. And I, you know, I reach out to them. I love them. I try to shake their hand. They slap it away. I call them friend. They say, "You're not my friend." But I do have a lot of enemies. You know, stone cold fact. And I don't want to have enemies. And I want everybody to be friends. And so I have to look at this. And they're my enemies because I pointed out things that got wrong. In John Bogle's case, you know, people love Bogle. In John Graney's case, people just didn't want me pointing out that Graney got the number wrong in his safe withdrawal rate study. They just didn't like it. They wanted me to just let it slide, and I can't. I physically can't. It's not in me, you know, because I feel it hurts people. So I had a look at this question. So I'm out there on the walk, and I said, well, the thing to do is not to not point out Bogle's mistakes and Graney's mistakes. The thing to do is to point out my mistakes. In other words, treat yourself the same way. Give yourself a little of the same medicine. See how you like it. And I did that. I wrote, you know, 10 reasons you shouldn't trust what Rob Bennett tells you about money. So good article, I believe. And, you know, some of them I'm a little tricky. You know, some of them it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't remember what I did exactly. But some of them are sort of, you know, they're not really criticisms, you know. They sort of are and they're sort of not. But there was one, or a couple, I think a couple were genuine criticisms, and one definitely was. Obviously, I can't see my own mistakes. That's the, you know, the problem with the idea of the article is great. Self-criticism is wonderful, but the problem is, you know, who among us is honest enough that he can see his own failings? We don't see our own failings. If we could see ourselves as others saw us, we wouldn't be able to get up out of bed in the morning, you know? So they say that that's going to happen when we die and we stand before God. We're going to sort of be able to see ourselves as we really are. And that's going to be a frightening moment for more than a few of us, I'm afraid. But I wrote one, you know, I just was thinking, and my wife knows me better than anybody, you know, on planet Earth. So I said, well, what does my wife say? Does she have any criticisms? And my wife will say from time to time, Rob, you're an egomaniac. You know, you're an egomaniac. And this came up just the other day. Where was it? Oh, on the Goon Central, they had something. And I was talking about Carly Simon. I was saying how, I said, you know, look, rational investing, Better, you know, valuation-informed indexing, higher returns, less risk. What's not to like? You know, I said, I can't get involved in this passive stuff because I just haven't got time for the pain. I said, Carly Simon nailed it. You know, John Bogle dropped the ball, but Carly Simon nailed it. At least there are some big names out there that get it right. Haven't got time for the pain. And I forget which one. It was one of my goon friends. Probably Orion, maybe. I'm not sure. Orion or Yip. I forget who it was, which one. And it was either Yip or Orion, I think. And it came back and said, oh, you're so vain, you probably think that song is about you, you know? And I said he stops, he aims, he shoots, he scores, you know? In other words, because he was saying I was an egomaniac, and my wife says that. So I felt that at least that one had some credibility. But when I wrote that article, John Walter Russell, kind soul that he is, you know, put up a little comment at the blog, and he said, I don't think you're an egomaniac. And there's a, you know, so I just let it be. You know, one person who knows me says I'm not. One person who knows me says I am. And the question, but the puzzle is, well, is Rob an egomaniac or is he not? Is he an egomaniac or is he not? So it's a puzzle. It's sort of an unanswered question. And it does have relevance to investing because I am saying that one of the criticisms that has been directed to me is, Rob, you're saying that you're changing the history of investing, that everything we've learned about investing, the dominant model, passive investing, is wrong. Last 30 years, all the books have to be rewritten. All the seminars have to be restructured. All the experts got it wrong. But you, Rob Bennett, oh, you know all the answers. You got it right. Oh, you came up with rational investing. You're so smart. You're so smart, Rob. The implicit criticism there is, you're an egomaniac. You know, who do you think you are? You know better than Eugene Fama, and you know better than John Bogle, and you know better than Burton Malkiel. Who do you think you are? You're some guy who posts stuff on the internet. That's who you are. And it's true. It's true. I am some guy who posts stuff on the internet. I've never gone to school. I've never studied investing. Never managed a big fund. Haven't written any, you know, million-selling books. And yet, I do maintain that the experts, not all of them, there's 10% that are rational, follow the rational model, but they're all rational in their personal lives, but there's 10% that follow the rational model, and 90% follow passive, which is wrong. Wrong right down to the core. So there is an investing question here. If you're going to listen to these podcasts, and if you're going to read my articles and read my posts, and use my calculators, you have to know, you know, this guy, Sershnitz. He posted at Morningstar.com, and I've mentioned before, my second favorite poster of all time, my favorite of all time is John Walter Russell. Behind him is Sershnitz, and Sershnitz is very sympathetic to me. He's defended me in very strong terms. Doesn't agree with all that I say, but he did put up he was kind enough to put up a post not too long ago saying, has Rob been vindicated because of the crash? So Sershnitz is a stand-up guy, and one time I was back at Vanguard Diehards, and Sershnitz, you know, when the people who defend me say things critical of me, I always listen more closely because the goons will just say anything. You know, according to the goons, I eat too many chocolate chip cookies, which is true. That one, they're shooting straight. They say I stalk women, which is false. I stalk one particular woman. I still stalk my wife from time to time, but outside of that, I'm innocent. What else do they say I do? I've got a grudge against John Graney and John Bogle, I'm incompetent with numbers. That one again. That one they got. They got right. They picked that one up from me. I just told them that, and then they use it against me. But, you know, the point here is, when they say something, you can't always, you know, take it to the bank. They'll say just about anything. But when my dear wife says something, when Sershnit says something, that's who I was talking about. When Sershnit says something, yeah, you know, there's probably something to it. And what Sershnit said was, he says, Rob, you don't have any street cred. He said, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. You know, you've got good arguments, you're a good writer, but, you know, you're a nice guy, for whatever that counts for. But, Rob, you don't stalk women. You know, I know you don't stalk women. But Rob, you don't have any street cred. You don't have any street cred. And my friend Artie, you know, I've been talking with him. He's been posting like a madman the last couple days. I think he's on vacation or something. But great poster, another great poster. He's been posting at the blog. And Artie has said for a long time, he said, it'd be great if you could get a peer-reviewed study. And I could care less, you know. I feel like, you know, the idea that valuations don't affect long-term returns is so nutso that the idea that you need a study to figure it out just sort of makes me laugh. And there are studies, you know, Shiller's done studies. So we don't need any more peer review studied. But Artie is obviously on my side, and he's saying, I think it would help. And he's making that same point as Sershnit made. He's saying, Rob, you know, yeah, you make good arguments, but you don't have any street cred. You got to have one of these, this stamp that says peer-reviewed study here. Get them while they last. Peer-reviewed studies. Dollar a page. You know, and then people will follow valuation-informed indexing. Then it'll be fine. But you got to get some street cred. And so the question is, you know, can we believe this individual? Because he's making such grand claims, you know. There was another guy that made this point very well. It was at, one of the goons came up with the idea. They said, let's put this, I don't remember the site. It was sort of a Wikipedia-type site, but that wasn't it. And they were going to put in definitions of words, and I think they were going to say, we need a word called hokomania. And hokomania is when Rob talks about investing. And some guy there, then somebody said, this is just abusive. We should delete this entry. And somebody else said, well, I've studied it, and here's the story. And there's this guy that, you know, gives us investing ideas. And then there's this gang, you know, that follows John Graney around that hates him, you know, with an undying passion. And you know, this Rob Bennett guy, he posts his hocus. He has grandiose ideas, grandiose. You know, and how do you respond to that? They're grand. They're certainly grand. You know, change the course of the history of investing. So they're grand, certainly. I don't think they're grandiose. That sounds bad. I think grandiose means you think they're grand and they're not really grand. But they're grand ideas. I can't dispute that part. So I need to address this. Why, you know, who am I to say that John Bogle and thousands of others got it wrong? All the books are wrong. Not all, but most. How did all that happen? And so it is a puzzle. And that question. See, there is a pattern in my life, and I've never had any experience like the great safe withdrawal rate debate. Believe me, never have I experienced anything like it, you know, even 100th. But I have had times in my life where there have been somewhat similar experiences. And I think the common theme in these experiences, I've tried to review them to learn, to solve this puzzle, and the common experience is, it's what my wife is getting at when she says, Rob, you're an egomaniac. In other words, I come off as an egomaniac. I'm not. I don't believe. I try to express my views in a humble way, quite frankly. In other words, when I'm talking about investing, I say what I believe. I say the people who follow passive investing are good people. The people who follow passive investing are smart people. There are a lot of good ideas that they've come up with, valuable insights. Then I say, however, they are wrong. They are wrong about the most simple question, the question of whether timing works. Because of that error, they have encouraged middle-class investors to do exactly the wrong thing for 30 years now. That caused the hugest bull market in history. Bull markets always cause massive bear markets. There's not one exception in the record. And because we had the biggest bull market in history, we're now going to have the biggest bear market in history, and it may well send our economy off a cliff, and it may well send us into a depression. And all of this could have been avoided had they acknowledged the error when they first learned of it, and there's now 30 years of academic research showing that they are wrong. They just won't admit it. They won't talk about it. It's there, and there are people who talk about it, like Shiller, you know, and a large number of others. There are dozens of people who talk about it. I can link you to them. But the big shots won't admit they're wrong. Will not admit they're wrong. I'll say it again. Will not admit they're wrong. That's the whole problem. So who's the egomaniac? The ones who won't admit they're wrong? Or the one who comes along and notices that they're wrong and points it out on a discussion board for the benefit of his friends? Who's the egomaniac? I think they're the egomaniacs, not me. They're the egomaniacs. There's a forum for people who write personal finance blogs. Money blog. Is it called Money Blog Finance? MBN? Money Blog Finance, something like that. And Money Finance Blogs, I don't know, something like that. But I had a blog entry on it yesterday. If you wanted to get the link, you could check that out. That was the blog entry was called The Delete Button. And I put up a thread there and I said, I'd like to do some guest blog entries at personal finance blogs. And I'll be describing the realities of how investing works. So that, you know, because a lot of your readers are, you know, sort of interested in that subject nowadays. And if anybody wants me to do a guest blog entry, let me know. And I had 8 people say, yes, I'd be interested. And then we had lots of good questions. And we had this super great thread, over 40 posts. People are learning. You know, none of this nastiness we've had at earlier places. Wonderful thread. Not everybody's convinced. There were some skeptical questions. But everybody's learning. Everybody's respectful. Everybody's warm. And then, you know, a goon came on, one of the goons from the Grainy board. You know, Grainy, they put up a notice that, oh, this thread, Rob is telling somebody the truth about stock investing. Get to work, goons. And somebody goes over there and puts up a trash post, and the guy deletes the entire thread, the owner. And I send him an email, and I say, why? And he says, you know, he just gives me these phony baloney answers. You know, there was an abusive post, and I didn't want to take the time to, you know, just delete the one, so I just felt it'd be easier to delete everything. Delete all the work, all these community members had done. Excuse me. I have something in my throat. I'm going to drink a little bit here. I'm just going to delete it all. You know, it's ridiculous. But the guy, I'm sure, personally believes in passive investing. And the arguments are so strong against it that he has no answer to them. He never posted on the thread. And so out of anger, he just says, I'll delete the thread. I'll deny this to everybody. Nobody will be allowed to see it. Who's the egomaniac? The guy who answered everybody's questions in a patient, polite, warm, friendly way? Or the guy who says, I'm king of the world. I have power. I can push a button and delete everybody's work. You know, there are 40 posts here that people have contributed over 3 days, and I can make it all disappear with a little press of my finger, and I'll do that. Because I don't like what's being said. Who's the egomaniac? So this has happened over and over again. I won't go through all the examples. I'll be here all day. You know, you've heard it before if you listen to the podcast. So who's the egomaniac? Now, that's the argument that I'm not an egomaniac, and I don't believe I am. In other words, something else I do all the time. If you've listened to the podcast, you know this. I say, don't ever you dare to change any of your investing ideas solely because of what Rob Bennett says. If you do, you're not my friend. Because it's wrong. I'm here to help people. And if people change their investing ideas because of what I said, it ain't going to help you. You're not going to have confidence in something that I said, you know, if you don't understand it on a deep level. So you've got to listen. You've got to think about it. You've got to check it out. You've got to listen to the people who don't agree with me. You've got to listen to the people who advocate passive investing, and you've got to read the articles where I point out the holes in valuation-informed indexing and say, well, are these holes serious enough, or should I go ahead? You've got to check out the historical data. Do, you know, check it out any which way you please, but don't go by just what I said. Or, frankly, you're a moron. And I don't call people morons lightly. But anyone who would go solely by what some guy on the internet says is a moron, in my opinion. So don't do that, please. So I don't have to call you a moron in future days. But that's not an egomaniac talking. You know, that's humility. I say I can get things wrong, so if I get things wrong, please let me know. You know, contact me, let me know. So, you know, there's an important sense, and my wife would, of course, agree with that. So she's not saying, you know, oh, he's absolutely an egomaniac in every way. But there's some way in which she feels there's something about me that is egotistical. And I think it might help, you know, as I was listening to that podcast, I thought it might help to explore that a little bit, get that on the table, because it's one piece of this puzzle. It's one piece of, you know, how did Rob learn these things that so many other smart people don't know about? And I think I have the answer, and I'll lay it out, and you can decide. You know, again, I can't, you know, when I'm talking about myself, there's a limit to how, you know, how deep can your honesty go. But I personally think I sort of know. And so I'm going to tell you what I think. I think it's a personality issue. And it has to do with different, God created different personalities. He meant for us all to work together. We all have pieces of the puzzle. And some of us, we all understand different things. It's sort of like, Say that I was getting dressed for a job interview, you know, an important meeting. I would not pick my own tie unless it was one that I already knew went with the shirt I was wearing. Okay, I have no skill. You know, people say that tie goes so great with that shirt, and I just look at them and I just think, why did they say that? Do they see something that I don't see? What are they talking about? What do they mean? What do they mean? It goes with it. What do they mean? I have a foggy notion of what they mean, you know. I mean, when it's really, really bad, it's checks with stripes, you know, and it's purple and green. I guess I sort of see it. But, you know, as a general rule, I don't know what they're talking about. And never would I trust my own judgment. Now, you know, so what I do is I go to my wife and I say, does this go with this? And she says, no, idiot, you know, or she says, yes, that looks good. Or, you know, what usually happens is she has to go in and pick one for me. And of course, there's certain combinations I know from earlier experience, and those are the ones I go with when she's not around. I know that they go. But the point is, God put her on earth so that, you know, I could be dressed in a reasonably proper way. You know, that's one of her little jobs. And God put me on earth for, you know, some other purpose. You know, let me try to think of something I'm good at around the house. It's not repairing the broken down washing machine, you know. But the boys will ask a question, you know. The boys, you know, they'll ask a question. You know, we always have question time. We, you know, I read to them at night, and they always come up with questions. Sometimes about all different subjects. But, and you know, I think I'm pretty good at that. You know, I don't. Not that I'm Mr. Answer Great, but I can usually answer it. And I do think I'm patient. I think that's a trait I have, a virtue I have. And so I'll go, you know, I can see it through their eyes, and I can patiently explain. Actually, my explanations tend to be too long. They say, Dad, get back to the story, you know, so, but the point is, God put me here for a reason, too. And I think what's going on with this question of is Rob an egomaniac or not is when it's a question in my field, when it's a question that I have the skills that few others possess, I'm not going to back down unless you come up with something that persuades me. In other words, when I'm sure, I'm sure. And, you know, if you want to say, can Rob be wrong? Yes. You know, 90% of the subjects that come up, I can be wrong. I remember one time, you know how I'll go on and on. These podcasts, I've got, 106 of them. Got probably 100 articles on investing at the site. Tens of thousands of discussion board posts. So clearly I think I know some stuff, right? And then I remember there was a woman who used to post at the blog frequently, almost daily, and one time she asked me the most basic question. You know, it was like, well, Rob, you're always talking about tips, treasury, inflation, protected securities. What's the procedure for buying them? And I was like, and I just stopped in my tracks. And I know roughly the procedure. I bought them for myself, so I know. I mean, but it was years ago. And I said, I don't want to answer that question. Now, I could go to the government site, and they have a description, and I could read it, and I could parrot that back to her. But I said, what purpose is served by me parroting it back? I'm playing a game. I'm pretending I know something I don't. Why not just link to the site and say, here, read it for yourself? So that's what I do. I refuse to answer those kinds of questions because I have nothing to offer. Somebody skilled in that could do it. Somebody could summarize, the government description of how to buy tips and maybe give say this is the best way to buy them. Buy them at the auction instead of buying them on the market and all this sort of thing. And, buy them for this tax vehicle, and all this. All that stuff matters. It's all important, but it ain't, you don't want to come to Rob Bennett to figure that out. I figure it out for myself when I have to. When I have to do the transaction, I sit down there and put myself through the pain of figuring it out. But I have no natural ability in that department. None. So when I say I can be wrong, there's a whole bunch of things out there I can be wrong on. But when I think I'm right, and on the question of whether valuations affect long-term returns, I am 99.99999% sure I'm right. I am more sure of that than I am sure that the moon is not made of green cheese. On those questions, it's hard to get me to back down because I'm so sure I'm right. And I can still be friends with people. I can still say, hey, you disagree, but fine. You're my friend. But I can't say what I don't believe. So, of course, all the friction came from the fact that I said at Motley Fool that John Graney's safe withdrawal rate study is analytically invalid, that the numbers are wrong. That it's going to cause millions, well, not that study itself, but the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are going to cause millions of busted retirements. People have been planning their retirements according to studies that get all the numbers wrong. And they've been doing it for years now. And it's a scandal. Those studies should be corrected. This came up in that thread I was telling you about. The thread, at whatever it is, Money Blog Network Forum, whatever it's called. It's a forum, for people that write personal finance blogs. And one of the guys, Four Pillars, he has a blog. It's a good blog. He's a good guy. And he said, what is it about these safe withdrawal rate studies that bug you so much? And I said, well, I had a lot of friends at Motley Fool. And they believe in these studies. And there was a guy there promoting them. And they handed in retirements from corporate jobs based on the numbers in these studies. And the odds are very strong that they're all going to suffer busted retirements. And it makes me sick. I said, is that a problem or is it not? And his answer was, well, it's hard to say. Well, it's hard for him to say. It's not hard for me to say. It's a problem. It's a problem. Human suffering is a problem. I'm right. And the people who won't correct the studies are wrong. I'm right. And the people who won't correct the studies are wrong. Now you know why my wife says I'm an egomaniac. Because when I think I'm right, I'm a bulldog. I'm not naturally a person who insists that he's right. Because I know that I screw up. But when it comes to something where the skill set that I was given comes into play, and I'm just sure as anything that I'm right, and others are unyielding, and they're hurting millions of people, I feel that I have no choice. I just feel that I have no choice. I feel I'm backed into a corner and I have to tell the truth, and that's that. I have to say I'm right and they're wrong. I just don't know what else I can do. I can't wake up in the morning if I don't do that. So, you know, that's one layer. That's one thing that's going on, and I think that's what my wife means. In other words, if you hang around with Rob Bennett long enough, you're going to run into these cases where this comes into play. It's sort of a pattern in my life. I've never had anything like the Great Debate, nothing comparable, but I've had the same pattern. You know, not often, but I could point to two or three earlier times in my life where things like this have happened. And the question is why? Why does that pattern repeat? And I think it's a personality trait. And so I'm going to try to describe that, hopefully briefly. But there's something called Myers-Briggs personality indicator. Some people don't even believe in it, but I believe in it because it's helped me to understand things that I didn't understand. It's helped me solve puzzles. Myers-Briggs assigns four letters to each personality, and it claims there are basically 16 types of personalities, and each of these you know, personality types respond to life events in different ways. And the people who came up with the passive investing model, the people that came up with the people who made all the mistakes, the people who caused this economic crisis, those people are mostly INTJs. I'm not going to tell you what that means. You'll have to look it up on the internet. INTJ. If you enter that into a Google search, you'll get descriptions of that personality type. It's the personality type that becomes engineers, accountants, economists, very smart, you know, but they're not strong in interpersonal relationships. They're frankly cold. You know, that sounds critical, but you know, God put them here for a reason. God didn't want us all to be warm and friendly and fuzzy. He wanted some cold ones in there. You know, God is smarter than I am. He knows what he's doing. We need INTJs. Frankly, we need the efficient market theory. It was a plus that Eugene Fama came out with that theory. It was a plus. It advanced our understanding of how stock investing works. The problem was we let the INTJs control the field. These people, you know, I love them. When I say these people, don't make it, I don't want you to think that I'm, you know, it's a put down. I love them. But I love them in their place. I love them as part of the community. But they have taken over the field. They think they know it all, and the rest of us know nothing. And boy, are they wrong about that. And boy, have they caused a lot of problems. And there's two separate issues here. But they both are rooted in the same thing. The INTJs took over investing a long time ago. Most of the rest of us, it's not just INTJs. There are related personality types. It's INTJs and similar types. So there might be three or four of the 16 categories that are in the same general, you know, area. And I'll bet any amount of money. I know John Graney's told me he's an INTJ. I'd bet $20 Mel Lindauer's an INTJ or something similar. My guess is that John Bogle is too. I can't swear with Bogle because I haven't, you know, interacted with him as much. But my guess is, and Bill Bernstein, I'll bet, is an INTJ. And Scott Burns, I'll bet, is an INTJ. Or something similar. All of the big name experts, not all, but most of the big name experts fall into that category or one of those categories. And that's why the investing advice you have heard for the past 30 years is a disaster. INTJs cannot do it on their own. They can't. God didn't give them the skills to do it. They can't do it. We're asking them to do something they're not capable of doing. I know this. You know, I know this to be so. People can't believe that's a problem. They think, oh, well, surely if there was some lacking in the INTJs, somebody would come along. And no. The INTJs don't want anybody to come along. I'll bet you that guy who deleted the post, deleted the thread at the Money Blog Network. It's you know, he's probably an INTJ or similar. You know, and he can't stand knowing that his fellow INTJs got it wrong. And I said that on the thread. I mean, clear as can be. I said, they got it wrong. They caused this crisis. They're causing a Great Depression because they can't admit a mistake. And he feels for them because he's one of them. And he slams the whole thread down. This is what INTJs do. And the rest of us need to work up some backbone and say, hey, INTJs, we love you guys, but chill out. The world's not made up just of INTJs. INTJs can never know everything there is to know. As I said, it's a double problem. The INTJs took over investing a long time ago, and they've also taken over the internet. They don't have a strong control of the internet as they do on investing, but they made a lot of the rules. INTJs love computer stuff. And so they were the first to get on the internet, and they adopted all these idiotic rules about the way we'll control discussion boards is with smear campaigns. Anybody says something we don't like, we'll run a smear campaign and drive them off. That's an INTJ tactic. It's a weakness of this personality type. Sarcasm, indifference to human misery. You know, these are INTJ traits. Again, we need them. They're smart. You know, they come up with great inventions, great theories, great advances, but they live in the world of ideas. They don't live in the world of people. And when the ideas come into conflict with people, their ideas, well, delete the people. We don't need them. We need these ideas. And they just, you know, you can talk to them till you're blue in the face. Now, the only thing that will ever change it is when the non-INTJs speak up, the INTJs will rein themselves in, you know. They won't like it, but they'll say, well, I guess we have to listen. We have no choice. And they won't really listen, but they'll let other people listen. And that will change the history of investing, and it will change the history of the internet. But the rest of us are intimidated by this stuff. They talk about Sharpe ratios, and the rest of us fall down on the ground and say, oh, I dare not post. They just mentioned Sharpe ratios. I don't know what the hell a Sharpe ratio is. So they're smarter than me, but they're not. They're talking about Sharpe ratios because they don't have any answers to your questions. If they knew the answers to the questions, they would answer the questions. It's a game. It's a smokescreen. Well, I want to talk just for a minute, though, about my personality type, because that's, you know, that's the question of am I an egomaniac or not. I discovered a book on Myers-Briggs, and this was a long, long time ago, probably 20 years, I don't know, long time ago. And the best book I know of on this subject is Do What You Are. It's a career planning book. I think it's the best career planning book I've ever seen. But that wasn't the first one I read. That wasn't the one where I discovered it, and I don't remember the one. What the name of it was, the one I discovered it. But, you know, all of us have little, dramas in our life that repeat. I think we all do. I do, and this is what I'm talking about, but I think we all do. And I have sort of a drama where I'm very similar to the INTJs. You see, 3 out of 4 characteristics, I've got the same. So I know where they're coming from. I'm very much opposed to things they do, but I appreciate what they do. See, this is the common theme in all of my writing on investing. I'm always telling you how I love John Bogle, how I'm a true Boglehead. I appreciate what Bogle does more than the Bogleheads do because I see the flaws. I see both the good and the bad in it. I just have a different perspective on it, but I see the potential. And if you unlock that potential, John Bogle's ideas would change the history of the world. But you have to tell the truth. You can't keep covering up the mistakes. For his ideas to have a good effect on the world rather than a bad effect, you have to acknowledge the mistakes and fix it. So I was reading this book. I don't know why I got the book. I have no idea. When you read one of these books, you sort of want to figure out what you are. What am I? And they gave you a little test. But I always had a bit of a hang up because when I was growing up, people would say I was smart. You know, I skipped a grade and all this sort of thing. And people would say, oh, he's smart. He's a brain. You know, I'm not that smart, but I'm reasonably smart. I'm not dumb, but I'm not super smart. A lot of smarter people than me. But I don't take much pride in that. That's not something that I don't really buy it. You know, as I say, I'm not dumb, but I'm not being falsely modest. I'm just not super smart. But when I would take these tests, I would always think, well, the IN, I'm an INFJ, and the F stands for feeling. And the contrast with the INTJ is the T stands for thinking. So I would always assume, since people said I was smart, I must be a thinker, not a feeler. You know, it has to do with the definitions of the words. That's not what we think the words mean isn't really what they mean in Myers-Briggs. But I got fooled by that. And I thought, well, I have to be a thinker. So I would put down T. And I'm not a thinker at all. I'm totally a feeler. But I didn't know that for many years. And so I would try to squeeze myself into the INTJ mode, and it didn't fit. It didn't sound like me. And I'm like, nah, this doesn't really work. And then eventually, I took some of these tests, and it started to, I started to get it. I said, wait a minute, maybe could I be a feeler, And I thought, no. But eventually I broke down and said, well, let me look at what they say about INFJs. Let me see. Maybe I'm a feeler. And when I read that, it was like somebody had been reading my diary. I literally had tears in my eyes. And because, I've had battles with people, people I love, my brothers, friends. And it all comes down to me being an INFJ. And INFJs are a rare type. That doesn't mean good, just rare. And they're especially rare among men. I think what I read was less than 1% of men are INFJs. It's more common among women, but it's a rare personality type among men. So what this means is that all my life, I've had a skill set. It's a perfectly fine skill set. Nothing wrong with being an INFJ. But one that most other guys don't have. And so, when you're trying to be friends with them, they like you. They like the I and the N and the J. But when they get to that F part, it trips them up. In other words, a lot of my traits are traits that would generally be considered characteristic of women. So intuition, for example, there's this thing, women's intuition. That's INFJs are strong on intuition. But, men aren't supposed to be strong in intuition. Men are supposed to be logical thinkers, I'm the one in our marriage that's always saying, can you give me a hug? To have some expression of physical, intimacy or whatever, or just say you love me. I tell my boys all the time, anybody love this little boy, And they say, Mom, Daddy's talking mushy again, But that's supposed to be the woman doing that, and in our relationship it's the opposite. My wife is the hard thinker, and I'm the soft thinker. And so all through my life, this was sort of a struggle. In other words, it would affect my friendships. It would affect just everything. And when I read, I read the section. I'm like, it was sort of like you hear about homosexuals. When they come out, they just feel so relieved that they can say, this is what I am, instead of denying it. And I said, I finally know what I am. It's not that I'm messed up. It's not that nobody can, well, it is sort of true that nobody can understand me, but I now know why they can't understand me. They can't understand me because they're not expecting me to be an INFJ, because I'm a man. But there's nothing wrong with me. And so it took a great weight off of my shoulders. I had sort of felt there was something wrong with me, and it took a great weight off my shoulders, and now I'm just proud of it. I'm not embarrassed about it. I am what I am. I like other guys, but I will say I tend to have stronger friendships with women because they think more like I do, as a rule. There's all sorts of differences. Now, if you look at Myers-Briggs stuff on the internet, I know there was one site that gave, this made me laugh. There was one site that would give a one word description of each of the 16 personality types. I don't know what they had for INTJ. Granny had one. He would call himself Mastermind. And that's the kind of term you would use. If you're talking about an INTJ, you might say that's a mastermind. It's the kind of person that can become a mastermind. John Bogle, right? Mastermind. And John Graney and Mel Lindauer are just sort of, you know, they're following in Bogle's footsteps. So they think of themselves as masterminds, and others think of themselves as masterminds. No INFJ would ever think of himself as a mastermind. And of course, I find it offensive. When Graney called himself a mastermind, I was like, yuck! Yuck! You know, an INFJ, it's just repulsive. I mean, I can see the good part of being a mastermind, and I can acknowledge that there's a mastermind element there. I don't say it's not so. It's just I would never, ever, you know, portray myself as a mastermind or think of myself as a mastermind. It's just, it's against everything I am. Well, how does an INFJ think of himself? Or how is an INFJ properly characterized? Often by others, not by himself. The word they used to describe INFJs was seer. Somebody who sees the future. INFJs see the future. And I laughed when I saw that. I think I posted on it at Motley Fool one time. I said, I am a seer, you know. Ask me and I'll tell you your future, your fortune, future, whatever. Now, you know, what the heck does that mean? I mean, it sounds preposterous. Can INFJs see into the future? How the heck do they do that? And how many times I've had people tell me in investing discussions, Rob, you have a crystal ball? You're telling us there's going to be a stock crash, Rob. Do you have a crystal? Yeah, they've been telling me this since 2002. Rob, where's your crystal ball? What's your crystal ball say, Rob? INFJs are seers. Not me that says that. It's the people who write books on Myers-Briggs personality assessment that say that. Well, how do we know the future? You know, where do we get this power? It, you know, you'll have to read up on Myers-Briggs to really understand it. I can't go into it all here, but the short version is what INTJs are good at is they're good at logic. They construct logic chains. That's what Bogle does. That's what Bernstein does. That's what Burns does. All these people. And, oh, they think they're this, you know, they just think it's great. They love it. It's not that they're really egomaniacs. It's just that they love logic chains. That's what they're good at. So there's nothing wrong with loving what you're good at. You should love what you're good at. And they're proud of their work, and you should be proud of your work. The trouble is, they don't see it all. They see the logic chains, and they know they're strong. They know it. But they can't see the holes in it. The INFJ, you know, I tell people, I looked at Graney's site, and I saw the errors in his study in 10 minutes. You know, to me, it's just right there. I mean, it drives me crazy that people don't see it, but they don't. They're being sincere. They don't see it. But I see it. INFJs are not masterminds. We're not, you know, we use logic chains. It's not that we're irrational or that we don't think. It's just logic chains aren't the whole world to us. They're not. They're secondary. What INFJs have that the other personality types don't have is we see connections. We see connections that no other personality type sees. In other words, you take two facts that are seemingly unrelated, and the INFJ sees a line between them. And, you know, for good or for ill, God gave us that skill. It's a skill that's used in songwriting. You know, I used to write songs, and I wrote, you know, in my opinion, some very good songs. You know, I would have considered, you know, trying to take it somewhere if I had any ability to either play the guitar or to sing, and I have zero in both departments. Well, close to zero. I have zero ability to sing, and guitar playing is maybe a 2 on a scale of 10, but close to zero. So I couldn't take it anywhere. But, you know, people will often, you read interviews, you know, with Bob Dylan or Paul McCartney, and they'll say, you know, how do you write songs? Where do you come up with the ideas? And it's just, If you look at the lyrics to the song, the lyrics that are good, it's not logic chains that make a song work. You know, that's nonfiction. What makes it work is these, is just take a lyric apart. To me, this is like, it's so babyish to even mention this, but I don't think people see it. It always has to do with something that is a lyric where there's no connection, you know, just random lines. It's boring. It doesn't work. But a lyric that is a logic chain where one follows after the other, and they all fit together. It's boring, too. It's boring in a different way. And what gives the thing punch is that the person writing the lyric sees a connection that really does exist. That's true. It's a true connection. But most don't see it, and he just sort of sketches it, and he hints at it, and he tells you just enough that you get it. But he's not oppressive. Okay? Well, the skill there is an INFJ skill. Bob Dylan is an INF. I think he's an INFP. I don't think he's an INFJ. But he's got three of the four that I have. I believe he's an INFP. Well, the point here is, when you can see these connections, you can see where things are going. In other words, I can read news events and I can say, well, okay, this is happening and this is happening, and here's the connection between the two, and that's going to cause a big problem. That's going to cause a blow up, you know, and that's going to lead to this. In other words, I can just, you know, so I can tell the future. Now, you know, I can't say on August 23rd, 2010, such and such is going to happen. That maybe there's some personality type that can do that. I don't know, but I'm skeptical because I can't imagine being able to do it. Maybe that's why the INTJs are skeptical that I can tell the future. But I can see connections. I can't really tell the future in a direct sense, but I can see connections that others don't see, and seeing those connections, you can at least make speculation, informed speculation about what's going to happen in the future, because you're seeing things that nobody else sees. And so, you know, I'm going to wrap it up because these things go on too long, I know. But, you know, I want to mention something Artie said yesterday, because these things stick in my head. And Artie, you know, he posted the blog, good guy, smart guy. He gets valuation-informed indexing to a greater extent than almost anybody other than John Walter Russell and myself. But, you know, he just said something yesterday, and I felt like I hurt his feelings, and I felt a little bad about it. But he's brought up this thing about, he always brings up studies. You know, he always wants to see more studies. And, of course, there's nothing wrong in that. It's a smart thing to check out studies. But he says, can you point me to some, you know, I mentioned, I said, look, we have studies showing that long-term timing works. There's a lot of studies showing that. He says, can you point me to some? And I said, well, yeah, I said, I intend to have someday, I want to have a page at the site that, you know, lists the studies and links. That'd be a great thing to do. I just don't have time today, you know, to do it. I've never been able to get around to it. But I said, I have a link, you know, there's a link to Shiller's study at the stock return predictor page. Go there and look at that. I said, how many do you need to look at, Artie? You know, if there's one study that shows it, you know, all the others are going to show the same thing. How many do you need? And I think I hurt his feelings, you know, and he sort of said, he says, well, I just said I was going to look, you know. And I said, I understand. I said, I'm not trying to put you down. That's not the point. But it drives me a little crazy because the people who believe in passive investing, they say, well, you know, we have 100 studies, you know, 100 studies. And they do. There are 100 studies. But the problem is every darn one of those 100 studies shows the same thing, that short-term timing doesn't work. If you wanted to, you could have 5,000 of them. If it's true, you can generate as many studies as you want. The same thing's true with long-term timing. You know, I don't know how many we have. Let's say we have 20 studies that show that long-term timing works. Well, if we wanted to, we could have 5,000 or 50,000 or 500,000. Just run the same study over and over and over again. It's always going to come out the same. You don't need any studies. You can go to the historical data yourself. Schiller has it at his website. Go to the historical data. Look at it. You don't need to do a study. You know, you can look at it. You can go 1920. Here's what the P10 level is. Here's the stock allocation I would go with. Now let me look 10 years in the future and see how it worked out. And what you'll find out is long-term timing always works. If you go 1 year out and say, here's what I think I should do, it'll always not. I mean, it'll work sometimes, but it's basically random. It works 50% of the time and fails 50%. So that's called not working. It means it's a random result. Means, you know, you didn't get any edge. So knowing what the valuation level doesn't give you any edge in the short term, but it always gives you a big edge in the long term. And you can do 5,000 studies, and it's always going to say the same thing. So I do get a little impatient on this particular question, because every time you question the passive investing dogmatists, they say the same thing. They always say, we've got studies. And then you say, how about long-term timing? Have you looked at those studies? And they come back and they say, we've got studies. And they just won't acknowledge what you said. But if they acknowledge it, they'd see that we've got just as many studies showing that long-term timing works as we have showing that short-term timing doesn't work. And that's always going to be true. The reality is never going to change. There was a great thread at the Bogleheads, bogleheads.org, yesterday. I put it up as the link at the Today's Passion section of the site today. And it was called Locked in Thinking. And the guy just gave a question that he had in the one of these tests you take, you know, to get into college, whatever they call them, standard test. And you know, it bothered him. He read the answers. I guess he was preparing for it or something, and he thought the answer was E, and it turned out the answer was D, and it blew his mind because it was like a logic thing. And he said, "Wait a minute, they're right. I'm jumping to conclusions when I say E. It really is D." And it blew his little mind, and he never forgot it all these years. And the suggestion of the post was, could it be that the passive investing dogmatists have jumped to some conclusions? Yeah, that's the answer. Don't tell anybody that I told you. I'll get in a lot of trouble if they find out that you heard this from Rob Bennett. But you know what? That guy's right. They did jump to conclusions. They got it wrong. It turns out you can time the market. You must time the market. If you don't time the market, you're going to lose all your retirement money. The economy is going to go into the depression if we don't let people know not only that they can time the market, but that they must time the market. When prices get to insane levels, you must lower your stock allocation if you want to hold on to any of your retirement money. Don't tell them that you found out here. They're going to come after me if you tell them. Don't tell them. Don't say anything to anybody unless you're sure that they won't turn you in to the passive investing police. Please, don't do what I have done, children. Children, don't do what I have done. Don't tell. But do time the market, children, please. Please do time the market. I don't want you to lose all your retirement money. Do time the market. In the way that works. In the way that works. Not in the way that doesn't work. Not the way they always like to talk about that doesn't work. Do it in the way that it works. Please, children. All right. That's the story. The story is different personality types can see different things. That's the way God created the world. That's the way God planned it, says Billy Preston. That's the way God wants it to be. God wants the world to have INTJs coming up with great theories. We got to have masterminds. Gotta have John Bogles. God wants the world. God wants the enthusiasm, the dogmatism of the INTJs to be tempered by the equally important insights of the INFJs. God doesn't want us to drive the U.S. economy off a cliff. God wants us all to have a say. God wants the personal finance bloggers of the world to be able to learn how investing works at the financial blog forum, whatever it's called. Money blog finance, whatever it is. God wants bloggers of the world to be able to tune in and learn and then share what they learn with their readers. God wants the INTJs to learn how to pronounce those oh-so-difficult words, I was wrong. God wants John Bogle to learn how to say the words, I and was and wrong. He doesn't want Rob Bennett to make John Bogle feel like a fool for having sent the U.S. economy over a cliff. He wants Rob Bennett to be kind and charitable and loving and warm. And he wants Rob Bennett to take John Bogle's ideas and make them, transform them, so that the ideas work in the real world and so that people can use them to achieve investing success, not investing disaster. So that's what Rob Bennett's going to try to do. And there are going to be some who are going to hear those words and they're going to say, Rob, you're just some guy who posts on the internet. Rob, you're an egomaniac to think that you could do something to help John Bogle. Rob, you're an egomaniac. Rob. Well, if that's being an egomaniac, so be it. But the way it was set up, not by Rob Bennett and not by John Bogle, but by God, or by evolution, if you want to say that. You know, it's another one that we all have differences on, don't we? We don't all agree, and we have to figure out a way to live together in peace without agreeing. Some of us believe in both evolution and God, believe it or not. You know, I'm going to say John Bogle's wrong because I know he's wrong. I know John Bogle is wrong with greater confidence than I know that the moon isn't made of green cheese. And I have an obligation to say it. And there are times when, you know, if you had to live with me day in and day out, I think that there might come a day or two when you'd say, Rob, you're an egomaniac, man. And that's what my poor, suffering wife has been reduced to on occasion. But of course, there'll be other times when she says, hey, you know, you're cute. You know, I'm a cute egomaniac. I wouldn't mind it if people said it that way. I wouldn't mind it so much. Or Rob, you're a good father. Or, you know, Rob, you're a good husband. Or, you know, whatever it happens to be. So that's what it comes down to. I don't think I'm an egomaniac across the board. The answer to the puzzle is I don't think I'm an egomaniac across the board. I think that's why John says, you know, oh, doesn't seem like an egomaniac to me. But when I think I'm right, I'm a bulldog with a bone. And I'm not a bulldog with a bone because I'm trying to promote myself. I'm a bulldog with a bone because I'm trying to help people. And if until people acknowledge that valuations affect long-term returns, we can't get this train back on the track. That's the answer. That's the secret. That's why passive investing doesn't work. It's this idea that timing doesn't work that has caused all of this human misery. John Bogle's a genius. Let's start treating him like a genius. And a true genius admits his mistakes. John Bogle made a whopper of an error. The biggest mistake in the history of personal finance. We're not helping him by letting him repeat that error every time he goes out into public. We help the man by taking him aside and saying, John, you know, you're great with the logic chains. I think you might have made a little you know, a little boo-boo with the premise. You got to go back and you got to fix that. And that means when you fix it, that all of your investing ideas are going to be, you know, completely the opposite of what you've been telling us for 30 years. It's not true that we can't time the market. It's not true that we should stay with the same stock allocation. All of that is an unmitigated disaster. But that doesn't mean we don't love you. That doesn't mean we don't appreciate you. It doesn't mean we don't value you. It doesn't mean we don't recognize your intellect. It doesn't mean we don't say you're not a mastermind. It doesn't mean we don't want to build on your ideas. It just means you're a human. You goofed up, you know, you big dummy. You goofed up, you big dummy. Please fix. And then let's, you know, let's get the train back on the track. Let's all get together, shake hands, and let's start having some fun. If you have any thoughts on how to persuade our friend John to take things in the right direction, send me a note. Go to passionsaving.com. Look for the Contact Rob button on the left side of every page. Good luck with your investing strategies. You take care.